bells are calling.
This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Simms and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And we're finishing up this month what we have described as no-nans, possibly phonans, movies that are not Conan. By watching,
I mean, there's a lot of movies that aren't Conan, Matt, but like specifically, yeah. These are movies that exist within the Conan genre.
And that were released within a year of the release of the original Conan, the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. The one we are watching this time around is Hundra, a 1983 Italian-Spanish film starring Laureen Landon, which on the surface seems like a pretty, you know, just basic Conan ripoff, but the deeper you dig into it, the more interesting it is. Here are some interesting things about the movie Hundra. First of all, probably the most interesting thing is its director, a guy by the name of Matt Simber, who, weirdly, Matt Simber is a stage name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where he came up with the last name Simber.
Well, Matt, I think the question is, do you remember the 21st of Matt Simber? I know you do. That's your birthday.
You know my birthday. That's a great
your
guess.
Your birthday is 420 of Matt Simber.
That's right.
4th and the 20th of the month of Matt Simber.
He was born Thomas Vital Ottaviano. He is an Italian-American director who notably was the last husband of Jane Mansfield,
mm-hmm,
before her tragic death. He also spent a big chunk of the 80s directing the television series Glow, The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah. Not the Netflix scripted drama, but
no.
I guess scripted drama would be a good name for it, but the sports entertainment spectacular upon which that scripted drama is based.
Yes, he is loosely depicted in the Netflix Glow television series by Lock the Gates, Mark Marone.
That's him.
I mean, that character, it seems pretty wildly different from Matt Simber, the guy. But if you listen to anybody like in an interview who was part of Glow talk about Matt Simber, he was definitely a character. He was a weird dude who had weird ideas for like what a wrestling television show should be. I listened to, you know, Ivory got inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame recently, and I listened to an interview she gave about it. He's talked about quite a bit in the Glow documentary,
mm-hmm,
that's on Netflix. Just an interesting guy, Matt Simber. And also, interestingly, almost every movie or television show he's been involved with has been female-led. That's been his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
So Hundra certainly falls into that category. Would you like to hear something else that's interesting about Hundra, Chris?
I would love to hear something else interesting about Hundra.
Okay. So it was, you know, not received with great affection upon its release.
Uh-huh.
But in the intervening years, there have been arguments for it to be considered a cult film. Okay. It has been favorably compared by Keith Breese of filmcritic.com to Xena.
Okay, that's something I like.
That's something you like. Judge David Johnson of DVDverdict.com. I'm supposing judge is not an official title.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Do you think he is official on that one?
Sort of said that it's only a camp film. But others have compared it favorably to the Red Sonja character.
Okay.
It's been noted that this movie came out before the Red Sonja film, which was not released until 1985.
Right.
Several years after the original Conan. Richard Sheeb of a movie website in New Zealand said that this is a better incarnation of the spirit of the Red Sonja stories than the Red Sonja film ever was.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
So I think we have a lot to chew on before we get into watching Hundra on Amazon.com. It is available on Amazon Prime if you have that service.
Yeah. It's one of like 8 movies available on Amazon Prime.
There are more than that. They're just all like really cheesy and bad.
Well, the thing I like to say about Amazon Prime is that I was once looking for a Star Trek movie to watch because I wanted to watch Star Trek Nemesis. This is before you bought it for me on Blu-ray for Christmas, Matt.
Sure.
And so I just typed in Star Trek to see what was on that Prime streaming video. There were no Star Trek movies. There was a video of a lady playing the theme to Star Trek The Next Generation on an ocarina. That's the kind of content that is available streaming on Amazon Prime. No shade on her. She was doing a very good job and did have a costume.
Like a YouTube video?
Kinda. I mean, look, I'm sure it's still on there. Maybe we could do a bonus Movie Fighters on it.
Wild. Here's another thing I need to point out about Hundra before we watch it. You talk about Amazon Prime not having a trove of movies to watch. There is a surprising number of Phonans on there. I feel like every Phonan we've watched for this series has been on Amazon Prime.
Yes. Weirdly enough, no Beastmaster 2 or Beastmaster 3.
No, only the original jam.
Because if they would have had Through the Portal of Time or the Eye of Braxis as true BM heads, no, those movies. We would be watching those for this series.
The BM heads have a very unfortunate fan club name.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
There seems to be a community within Amazon of people who review specifically these sword and sandal action films from the early 80s. And there are 68 reviews currently on Amazon Prime.
Oh, it's so close to being nice.
It's so close.
Only one of you go make this movie nice.
Go make this movie nice, somebody. But they have reviewed it collectively as 2.5 out of 5 stars. What's interesting is if you find the negative reviews and read them, Chris, I will give you 3 guesses as to what one of the key negatives that I noticed was in these reviews.
I'm going to guess like no nudity.
That's not what I observed. Well, I guess we'll find out the amount of nudity that's in the movie.
Okay. Then I am at a loss, my friend.
A complaint that I saw in more than one review is that it's too feminist.
Okay. All right. So, like, I would be very curious to know what the community of people reviewing fake Conan the Barbarian movies on Amazon Prime define as being too feminist.
Well, one review in particular said that this is, look, they don't have any problem with feminism, right? It's
Yeah,
it's, you know,
it's just an agenda.
They're all for equality, you know.
Yeah.
But the problem with this movie is that it depicts men as too stupid.
That's weird for that to be a problem with this barbarian movie.
They describe it specifically as extremely overblown pro-toxic feminism stereotypes.
Right. That's a thing we all know.
I'll read the first 2 sentences of the 4th paragraph of this review. It's very long.
That's it. That's intense, my fellow.
It goes on for quite a while after that, too, enumerating other problems with the movie. But
we got a username on this, or is it an Amazon-certified real name?
This is Dice Man.
Cool.
Hundra rides back into the isolated woodland village with her latest score after hunting for wild game. Parenthetical, totally acceptable, lots of women hunt.
Uh-huh, yeah, right, because you need it to be accurate. You want that accuracy.
When Hundra is introduced, she makes it very clear that she hates all men.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how clear it is when we watch the movie.
Uh-huh. I mean, look, there is like a non-zero chance she is going to say, I hate all men.
That is true. If that is the line, I will applaud. All right, so we're going to watch Hundra. It is, as I mentioned, available on Amazon Prime. If you have that service, you can watch along with us. If not, cool. But before we do watch the movie, Chris, we must do. It is incumbent upon us to participate in the hottest segment in all of podcasting. Snack Situation. Chris, what are you snacking on over there?
Matt, I got a little confession to make.
Okay.
You know this, but our listeners may not know this. I was a little bit late, like about 8 minutes late to the recording today. And that is because I got a little hungry about 45 minutes ago. And so I ate my snack already. The snack is gone. No more snack.
It's a ghost snack. We have a ghost snack.
It's a ghost of a snack. Do, 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 do. I guess it's a baby. Yeah, I go to the farmer's market every week, which is great. If you have a local farmer's market and you're not hitting it up, I suggest you give that a shot. It has made my life much more enjoyable, and I can highly back that course of action. But one of the nice things about my local farmer's market, the Durham Farmer's Market, is that there is a table of two very nice ladies selling very, very good salsas and chips and pico de gallo and guacamole. So, like, literally every week I buy something from them because it is all extremely delicious. I got a little hungry, and that is what I ate. It was very good. It's all gone now. I apologize that I did not wait to enjoy that with you, but I was hungry.
Well, I'm glad to hear it was a good experience. That all sounds very delicious.
There may be a bonus snack, an actual movie fighter snack coming later, but I can't confirm or deny that at this time.
All right. A mystery to solve. I got a similar bug last night and went to my local, very authentic Taqueria Munoz. Shout out to them. And got some real, real good, authentic Mexican food. Corn tortillas, baby!
It's really weird that, like, no food places, I guess restaurants is what those are usually called, or, like, snack companies want to sponsor us, because we do give these crucial shout outs.
We do. For my snack, I am going back to basics. Simple. Okay. Making it real. Simple yet delicious. I have some fresh baked, warm Toll House chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, get them cookies, baby.
Love them. So I will be eating those as we watch Hundra. And that is going to be a good time. As I said, you can watch Hundra along with us if you wish. If you do not wish to do so, which is your decision to make.
I mean, we did say that we watch the movie, so they don't have to.
That is true. It is 1 hour and 49 minutes. It is up to you. Either way, we're going to take a quick little pause here to watch the movie. You're going to hear an ad and a musical interlude, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to discuss Hundra, a Matt Simber film.
Nothing has raised my expectations as much as a grump on Amazon saying it's too feminist. Nothing has lowered them like finding out this thing is 1 hour and 49 minutes long.
And we are back from watching Hundra. About 20 minutes in, we were saying to ourselves, hey, Chris, and you were saying, hey, Matt, and we were asking, does this movie rule?
There was a moment where we thought this movie was going to rule, like, and rule hard. Honestly.
Yeah, like the first 20 minutes go hard, and it seems like this movie is going to rule.
Yeah.
The following hour and 20 minutes temper that somewhat.
I described the – if you're going to graph the quality of this movie, as just a straight 45 degree line starting in the upper left and steadily going down.
I think it picks up again at the very end.
It does. It does. But there's moments, there's little spikes, but nothing lives up to that dope opening.
Well, the problem is the opening tells what probably should be the entire story of the movie. Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
it's the same opening as every other movie of this type.
Well, but what I mean is, okay, so I'm not giving anything away by saying this movie starts with Hundra's entire village being wiped out.
Yes.
Because it's how every other movie in this series has started.
She gets Conan'd, she gets Beastmastered.
She gets Ator'd. But the scene of the village getting destroyed rules a lot harder than any of those scenes of villages getting destroyed.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I will say, a little too feminist for my taste. No, not like, if you want to know what kind of dude wrote that, watch this movie, because it is... Anyway.
Okay, so we get about like 5 minutes of like setting up Hundra and her deal, which is... She lives in a village of all women, which is another trope from these kinds of movies, because in Beastmaster we had another warrior women village.
Yeah, we got warrior women in the house here.
Hundra is the only member of the village who has never had sex. She's never lain with a man, so to speak. Yeah.
Because the women will just go out and breed, I guess, is the way the movie puts it.
They go out and take a man's seed. That's how they talk about it.
They say seed so much in this movie. They do. In various contexts.
It's true. Like, what they do is they go get pregnant, mm-hmm. then they come back to the village and they have the baby.
Yes.
If the baby is a girl, they keep it.
Yes.
If the baby is a boy, they don't really explain what they do, but there is a hilarious moment right at the beginning where someone's giving birth, a member of the village is giving birth, and this woman walks out of the tent and she's like, male child. And she kind of shrugs.
She shrugs, and it's very funny.
And all the other women go, ugh.
They do actually explain what they do, like, because she's like, hey, well, when she goes out to find another man, she can give that one away.
Okay, so they just give them away.
So yeah, they just give them away. And then somebody says, yeah, that's, you know, when she goes out next time, yeah, that's going to be tomorrow, because that's Adenia. And I remember it because there's a lot of jokes about how she wants Adenia.
Yeah, she loves that D.
Yeah.
Adenia. But there's a wild part here where like Hundra is talking to sort of her mentor, and they're talking about her sister, and they're like, hey Hundra, you gotta go out and get fucked, like, you gotta go out and you know, get that D. And Hundra's like, no, like,
absolutely not.
Hundra's like, no fucking way, men are trash, they suck, mm-hmm. and they never do anything good. Which, like, it does front load the movie with that, so I don't understand why people are saying, like, this movie's too feminist, but if I had that type of thought process, I guess I could get there.
Well, the review that you read about how, you know, Hundra comes back from hunting, it talks about how much she hates men. Hundra comes back from hunting at the start of this movie, and again, we're not really spoiling it, to find her village being massacred. She's not like just coming back with a deer going, you know what? Men are garbage.
Right. Like, and her village is being massacred by a tribe, the Bull Tribe, of all men. Like, everybody is a man. But the thing that rules about that village destruction scene is how much the women fight back.
Yeah. We get narration at the start of this movie that is like, this tribe, like, is women who have freed themselves from the oppression of men, because men only want to, like, dominate them, and then they're not having it, so they left. And a lot of movies will do that, but then they won't pay that off. This movie pays it off. like, the Bull Tribe does win. They do, in fact, wipe out Hundra's people, but, like, only by virtue of showing up in superior numbers. The women straight, like, it is a, first of all, it's a long battle. Like,
yeah.
It's 10 or 15, like 10 minutes of this movie, probably.
Well, I was keeping an eye on the time. So the whole opening battle scene happens, and then the opening credits run after that. The opening credits were not running until the 13-minute mark of the movie.
Yeah.
So after maybe like a few minutes of setup, there's like 8 minutes of battle scene. And there is brutal shit happening in this battle scene.
It holds up. It, because it's like Game of Thrones level, like, violence.
It's and not that level of people. It's not that many people. But it's certainly like,
it's not that level of production. Like, at one point, one of the Bull Tribe dudes, like, grabs a lady by the hair and starts dragging her, and like, alongside his horse, and then cuts her head off.
Brutal.
That's bananas. The women are, like, taking dudes out left and right. Like one of the women picks up a mace and just goes to town and starts choking a dude out with a mace while she's killing another guy.
There's a woman who's, like, drowning a guy in, like, 3 inches of water and then hitting him over the head with a rock. Probably the most brutal thing that happens in the whole thing. And trigger warning here, content warning here. There is a sexual assault that occurs at the end of this. Just, you know, hammering home how terrible these men are. And as that's occurring, a woman who has been run through with a spear gets up, runs at these guys, and runs one of those guys through with the spear that she got run through with.
Yeah, that's not, it's not like she pulls it out and runs at him. It's sticking through her torso, and she tackles a dude to impale him on it as well.
Yeah. Brutal.
It's pretty, like, honestly, like, look, the sexual assault, not great. Unfortunately, it is a thing where I think we've, in movies of this vintage, of this type, sadly, I think we've come to expect it. That part did not redeem the scene, but did make it, like, that's the thing I would much rather talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it was justified here, but I feel like story-wise it was more justified here than it is in a lot of other movies.
Yeah, I mean, I was...
Because it's yet another reason for Hundra to be like, fuck these guys, right?
Yeah. It's, again, like, I feel like it's a weird bit of this genre where it's so expected, but I was honestly kind of surprised there wasn't more. But, yeah, like, the fight is genuinely pretty dope.
I mean, there is a lot more weird sex stuff in the movie.
Oh, there's a ton of weird sex stuff coming up. But, like,
but it's not out and out sexual assault. It's just, like, yeah, kind of up to the line.
It's a problematic film.
Yeah. So Hundra, after this happens, she gets on her horse. She starts riding and pretty quickly comes upon these guys, the Bull Tribe guys, as they're riding along, and she's like, okay, I guess I'm going to kill every last one of these motherfuckers.
Man, I got a quick snack situation update. I was just given some flan rice pudding.
Oh, very nice.
Aiden made while we were recording, or while we were watching the movies.
So as the credits run, Hundra rides across the country to this, like, big open area with some big rocks so she can hide behind the rocks and shoot arrows at these guys as they pass by. So she does that. When she shoots the arrows, these sound effects occur. Oh, also during the opening credits, we find out that the music in this movie is by Ennio Morricone.
High point. High point. Also kind of a low point. We'll get to it.
We'll get there. She shoots like 3 arrows at these guys, takes out all the guys with the arrows. Then she goes running back behind the rocks, comes back up. Now she's throwing knives.
Yeah, she does a lot of cool knife throwing in this film.
She throws knives at these guys, gets a bunch of them with that. then just like the drag out knockdown, like hand to hand fighting happens where she like pulls out her sword and just starts wrecking these dudes.
At one point she swings her sword at a guy and he kind of blocks with the haft of an axe, and she just kind of starts sawing through the axe to kill him, which I have never seen before in a lifetime of watching fantasy movies, and is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's rad. And she kills all these guys. Finally, she like has got them all done for. They're all dead on the battlefield. She walks up to this guy who's laying there, reaches into his pocket, and pulls out a fully cooked turkey leg.
Yeah, like Castlevania style. Well,
like,
meat.
Like, yeah, like Final Fight.
Yeah.
Like there's just food in this guy's pocket. She's eating the turkey leg.
There's also a scene where she, like, gets that guy down, and she, like, brings her sword down and, like, stops it, like, an inch from his face. And we're like, oh, is she going to leave this guy alive to send a message? And then, no, she just turns her sword and cuts his head off instead.
She decides to finesse it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so she's eating the turkey leg. This other guy who she thought was dead but is just, like, playing dead, gets up and walks up behind her. He scares off her dog, which we need to talk about her dog a little bit. Her dog is named Beast. There's a scene right at the beginning of the movie where she's talking to the dog, calling him a coward.
Uh-huh.
Which does bear out. Like, the dog is not an attack dog by any stretch.
Yeah.
He's more like a dog butler.
He is, because it's his job to lead the horse around. And let me tell you, buddy, maybe the best part about this movie is seeing a dog be friends with a horse.
It's pretty great.
A plus.
It is pretty fucking great. Like, the animals in this movie are very well trained. Because when Hundra's riding the horse, there's stuff where Beast, like, gets up on the horse's back mm-hmm. and rides on the horse with her. Very good.
Yeah.
Anyway, the dog runs away, and he's, like, coming up behind her with a rock. She, like, picks her sword up, like holds the guy off for a second with one hand, is eating the turkey leg with the other hand.
She doesn't even pick the sword up. She just, when he tries to hit her with the rock, she just grabs the rock and holds it. And then like that guy falls down.
And the rock hits him in the head.
Yeah.
And she never puts down the turkey leg. And she's just like gnawing on the turkey leg the whole time. It fucking rules.
It is extremely choice.
That's about the first 20 minutes of the movie. All of that is great.
Yes.
After this, the movie takes a downward turn.
It loses its focus.
It slows down a lot, which is one big problem.
Well, because Hundra goes to talk to the Ancient One. And the Ancient One is a woman who's like maybe like 55.
She could be 60. She's got gray hair, but it's like cut short. So she still looks like an active lady.
She's an active senior.
Yeah.
Is what she is. Instead of the Ancient One, they should have called her the active senior.
That's what she is.
There is an actual pretty good exchange where she tells Hundra, "You have never let a man penetrate you." And Hundra goes, "Yeah, not with a sword, not with anything."
Yeah.
And then she's like, "No, but you have to, because you're the last member of our tribe. And so you've got to go, like, go get a kid so you can keep, you know, it's your job now to go get pregnant." And Hundra's like, how about fuck that? But then she decides that she should. And it turns out that the most virile men in the land are of the tribe of the bull. And she's like, yeah, but they killed my people. They killed everybody. But she's going to go there anyway.
Yeah, well, the Ancient One basically says, well, okay, what better tribe of men to bring our line back then mm-hmm. than those that killed us? Which, kind of weird reasoning, but whatever. Here's the weird thing about the Ancient One. She lives in this cave. She lives in this, like, series of caves,
mm-hmm.
which seem to be guarded by these, like, little people guards with red and blue paint on their faces.
I had forgotten about that part because it's weird.
I don't know why they're there. I don't know why they want to attack Hundra. I don't know why the Ancient One lives here and not in the village she lived in before, if they're all part of the same tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, why is any of that happening?
It's not really explained.
And after Hundra leaves the Ancient One's cave to go get pregnant, she gets into a fight with this, like, guard with paint on his face, and it's almost like a comedy fight.
It's absolutely a comedy fight, because at one point he does, like, a pratfall trying to tackle her off her horse.
Yeah. But he's not even, like, really trying to hurt her. He's got a pitchfork, and he's, like, scratching her on the legs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Also, I think this is a good point to mention, because during that fight with the guard, her horse falls over. And that just really happened. Like, there's no way they could fake that.
During the fight with the Bull Tribe guys at her village, like, a horse just runs over like a pen full of ducks.
Or geese or swans. I can't really tell what kind of birds they are.
Yeah. And there's not really, like, we didn't watch the credits all the way through. I didn't, at least. But I sure didn't see an American Humane Society.
I mean, it would have been the Italian Humane Society, probably. But either way, like, there's no way animals did not get harmed in the making of this movie.
Absolutely.
Because some of those stunts look real rough, and human beings in stunts also look pretty rough in points. So she fights that guy. After that, all right, so the point of the movie from this point on is Hundra wants to go have sex so that she can get pregnant to continue her line. Here's my thing.
Yeah?
The movie should have just been Hundra getting revenge.
Yeah, like every other movie of this type.
Yeah. Like, why all of a sudden is the point of the movie Hundra has to get pregnant now? That is a weird direction to take this in.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, buddy.
Hundra doesn't seem to be too into it, too. Because the first thing that happens at this point is she tries to ride her horse into the ocean.
Yeah, the horse, for real in real life, not into it.
Not into going into the ocean, certainly.
Yeah.
But it looks like that's what she's doing. Then we cut to another scene where she's just taken off all her clothes and the horse has had its saddle removed and she's just kind of riding around.
Uh-huh. But in the ocean still.
Yeah, still in the ocean. I don't know what's happening there. Then we get cut to a scene where she's like doing some reconnaissance on this guy and his – help me out here, Chris. Who are these ladies that are with him?
They're like his serving wenches, basically. They're servants. They're like very – they're, you know, they are not in charge.
He has returned from a hunt of his own to this, like, abandoned fortress. He's staying there for the evening. He's, like, got an animal that he has killed. He's cooking it over a fire. The women are sitting around, and he's giving them the scraps of what he's eating.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a metaphor, except it's not at all a metaphor.
Yeah, kind of. Hundra comes riding up, and totally wordlessly, there's this exchange where she basically tells the guy, well, I gotta fuck, you're a man, I guess we should do this.
Yeah.
And so they go into a bedroom, and then I'm gonna just put this the way Wikipedia puts it.
Okay.
The first candidate has bad manners, and it turns out that he is suffering with a sadistic personality disorder.
That's very charitable on all counts. Like, first of all, calling him the first candidate is very charitable. Secondly, I'd say bad manners. It probably goes a little bit beyond that.
I mean, he is farting and burping when you first see him.
Yeah. I don't know. Bad manners, I don't know if that covers it.
I'm not sure it totally covers it. And the diagnosis of sadistic personality disorder is way out there.
That's really making it seem like, you know, he's the real victim here.
Yeah. I hesitate to call this a sexual assault because Hundra is giving consent. He's just being too rough to start.
He's like pulling her hair and like, and then she's like, okay, no. And then he gets out a whip and gets it around her neck and like swings her around the hallway, which is weird. And then she kills the shit out of him, but in a way that takes way too long.
Well,
like, she gets a comedy fight.
She gets the upper hand and then proceeds to do wrestling moves on him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. You would have no trouble believing this was the gentleman responsible for Glow.
Yeah. Because she does like a leg scissors takedown, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of double axe handles. There's a crossbody. There's one sequence that's way too long where she's like hanging off of the rafters of the building and she has his head in her feet, in her legs. And she's like swinging him back and forth, hitting his head on the wall. There's another wrestling move right before that I don't remember what it was. But she does...
the airplane spin. She gets him for the airplane
spin. That's later. She does the airplane spin later. There's another wrestling move, and I don't remember, but we were calling the moves as she was doing them.
Yeah. If that's a commentary track that that people, like directors, want to start putting on films, Chris and Matt call the moves, I think we could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be more than happy to call some moves in a movie where people are doing wrestling moves. So that guy doesn't work out. And she's
bad like, manners.
Bad manners. And sadistic personality disorder. So then she goes to this town. She finds a town, and
this is you might as well call this Durham because this is the Bull City, baby.
It's the Bull City, very reminiscent of, say, a spaghetti western or an Akira Kurosawa Ronin film.
Very charitable.
She just goes riding into a town. But unlike those movies, she's not riding into town to just, like, I don't know, live her life quietly. She's there to find a man to fuck.
So she meets an old guy. And the way that she meets this old guy is that the guys sent by the evil king, who's not the guy from the beginning of the movie who attacks her village. Like... You said about halfway through this movie, hey, so that dude who got away, is he ever going to come back?
Okay, so yes, there was one guy. I don't even know if he was a guy that got away. He just watched her kill all the other guys and then rode off.
Yeah. I feel like he might have been the first candidate because he had a beard.
I don't fucking know.
I mean, I don't fucking know either, Matt. But like, point being... That dude is not going to be back for the climax of this film.
To my knowledge, he never showed up again. But yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
The Thulsa Doom of this movie, not in the house.
You talking about the Dakar?
Yeah, that's him. That's him.
Played by Dakar? Or Drakar? Uh-huh. So no, this movie has a high priest who is played by... John Ghaffari, who is also the producer of this film, and is possibly a co-writer of this film.
Yeah, because the co-writer of the film is John Goff.
Yeah.
And this guy is John Ghaffari.
Seems like a bad pseudonym for John Ghaffari.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, he has sent out his soldiers to take away young women from homes for... participation in a religious ceremony.
They're going to make them concubines what it is.
Yeah.
They're going to train them to be they actually use a word. Like at one point a guy is like, she's not docile or whatever. Like very like really underlining that metaphor. But they're going to, you know, teach them makeup and dressing well, and then they will all serve. as we are told later.
So this one guy, this older guy's granddaughter is taken away, and Hundra tries to stop it. She tries to save her by just like running her horse into a guy, which is pretty rad.
Yeah, why not?
And then she fights two of the soldiers inside the house, and that's when she does the airplane spin, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
That is to no avail. The granddaughter is still taken away. And the old guy is just like, well, okay, I guess they took my granddaughter. You want to come inside and eat? There's an extra seat at the table now.
Yeah, which is
the most defeated thing to say.
I think he actually says, I have an extra plate.
Yeah.
Because he only had two plates. It's rough. There's a guy in charge, like a majordomo type guy in charge back at the palace. And he's inspecting.
He's the high priest.
He's inspecting all the girls when a guy comes in. And he's like, hey, a woman just beat us up. And he's like, oh, well, I mean, you should go back out there and get her. Which I liked, because it's a very, like, oh yeah, if someone beats you up, you guys are soldiers, you should go back out with more soldiers. Like,
yeah, it's a real,
you need to bring more dudes.
It's a real Skeletor many faces kind of moment.
Yeah.
But so Hundra is sitting there in the grandfather's house, and he's explaining to her, like, the whole culture of this town. Mm-hmm. Where, like, girls get taken away, they get made into concubines, they, you know, there's nothing really we can do about it. Everybody here worships bulls. You know, it's just kind of how this town is.
Yeah, that's just the way this town is, baby.
That sets off, as they're talking, the soldiers show back up at the guy's house, and they're like, hey, Hundra, you're coming with us. And she's like, nope. She beats up those guys, and then there is a lengthy scene where she is just running away from the soldiers, climbing up walls, beating the shit out of them with their own spears, doing some fucking Assassin's Creed shit. Swinging on trellises.
The way that Matt is describing this makes this sound infinitely better than it actually is. This scene goes on for, I want to say, like an hour. Was it an hour?
It's not that long. It is too long. But I would not say it's not fun.
It's not fun. It's not good.
Fair enough. But, like, there's this whole thing where she's, like, swinging on this trellis. She's kicking soldiers, like, off of the walls. She's laughing the whole time, which kind of makes it fun.
When she gets a guy's spear and then she, like, gives him the old, like, drop the dude on the ropes and bounce him up and down a little bit spot.
Yeah.
And then she, like, throws him off a ledge, and then she's like, oh, your balls! It's pretty funny.
Yeah, she, like, taunts them as she's doing it. It's pretty good.
She does taunts. She hits R3.
Oh, she definitely does. By the end of it, it's very clear that this was, like, a whole comedy bit, because it ends with her falling off of a roof through, like, another roof, but it's like, cloth, so she just falls through.
Mm-hmm.
And then she falls into this room where she meets this guy named Padre. I didn't understand what was happening here, but Padre is a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was helping this kid with his illness. I thought he was a babysitter.
Yeah, he was, like, normally I'm the one who misses things. Matt, he's very clearly, like, helping a sick child.
I thought he was a babysitter because the only other woman with any degree of power in the city is a woman named Drachma, who is sort of just like the head concubine.
She's the favorite, I think, is the best way to put it.
You might call her the madam.
I don't know if I would quite go that far.
She certainly does a lot of the training.
Yes.
To like, you know, get these women prepared to be concubines. Either way, she has a son that she's keeping secret from everybody. Because if anybody found out she had a son, it'd be the end for her.
Yeah.
But the doctor is looking after her son. She shows up and she's like, hey, is my son okay? And the doctor's like, he'll be okay. And we find out about all of that. Hundra watches all of this going on, and she's like, oh, okay, I know who I'm fucking. I'm fucking that doctor.
Yeah, because he's got a very square head.
His head is the squarest head I've ever seen.
Yeah. Also, you should say, Drachma is, like, that's her name. It is mentioned maybe, like, twice?
I think it said more than that, but based on the way people say it, I never would have known that was her name from the movie. I had to look it up.
Yeah, it's not, things are not clear in Hundra.
Well, okay, everybody has very, very strong accents.
Padre, whatever his name is.
Padre.
Padre, specifically. There's a part where Hundra's like, hey, well, we should talk about this. Hundra is like, yo, you're the dude, because you are the first person who is under 60 years old, the first man who is under 60 years old who has ever been nice to me.
Yeah.
And so,
and we should note, Lorraine Landon, who is Canadian, does not have an accent, but everybody else does.
Yes. So she says this to Padre, and Padre's like, yeah, no, I'm not, like, actually into it, I don't think. And she starts in a scene that would be kind of horrifying were it Conan.
Yeah.
She starts just throwing knives at him.
At his clothes and pinning him to the door.
Yeah. And then being like, how about now? How about now?
And finally she throws one. He's like, look, you can't rape me because I have to be aroused for us to have sex. And so she throws a knife right under his dick, like right between his legs.
Yeah. And he looks at her and goes, that's not helping.
Yeah, that might be the best line in the whole movie.
It really is not bad, honestly.
Finally, she relents and she's like, okay, fine.
Well, she says, if I look like her, would you be into it? Talking about Drachma. Did I get her name right? Dragmar?
Drachma? Drachma.
Drachma.
Yeah.
You know, she says that looking at Drachma, and he's like, silk is better than steel.
Which, to translate, is...
Silk is better than love for steel. Better for love than steel.
Which, to translate, is... I like soft things more than hard metallic things. Like, yes. He wants a soft lady.
Yeah.
So, immediately, Hundra formulates a plan where she is going to go and be trained as one of these concubines,
mm-hmm.
so that she can come back to Padre and he's going to be like, oh yeah, I want to fuck you now.
This works, by the way. Spoiler warning, it works.
Immediately after this begins the transformation of Hundra. Because she walks out of the doctor's office door, right? And is instantly captured by the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Where she is told that she's going to be taken to the temple. And she puts her hands up and gets a little grin on her face. Because she knows that the temple is where she's going to be taken to be made into one of those concubines. Where she's going to learn to wear makeup and shit.
That's right, y'all. We're going to get a real pretty woman situation.
So thus begins the difficult path for Hundra to become one of these concubines, because she learns there's a lot of weird customs involved in this whole scenario.
Yeah.
Starting with, she goes to see a ceremony for the newest recruits. They have to bow to a bull, an actual for real bull.
There's a for real bull in this movie.
They have to bow to this group of men who are repeatedly referred to as the chieftains.
Which is spelled chieftons.
In the subtitles.
In the subtitles.
Yeah. And they do nothing but sit around and go, wah. They're basically Wario.
They're basically Wario in a sex cave.
Oh, yeah, they live in a sex cave.
They live in a sex cave.
So the high priest comes out and he goes, hey, everybody, we're going to get these new girls ready to be concubines. They're going to bow to the bull. They're going to bow to the chieftains. Then the chieftains are just going to take them away. And for real, they just pick these women up, rip their clothes off, and take them to some unseen corner of the sex cave. Mm-hmm. Pretty rough.
Not great. Not great.
And so Hundra kind of reacts to this by going, no. I don't think I want to do this. Starts to fight back a little bit. Eventually, Drachma has to kind of pull her aside and say, like, look, this is just how it is. Like, women have to wear makeup. They have to do their hair. They have to, you know, wear nice clothes. And there's a whole montage sequence here where Hundra is having makeup applied and getting her hair done. And
oh, Matt. Does she, like, did she surely a warrior of her skill can put that lipstick on perfectly?
It's all over her face, Chris.
What?
It's all over her face.
Unbelievable. What about, like, okay, well, she's good at, like, swords and riding horses, so I'm sure she's going to be, like, very adept at table manners.
Oh, absolutely not. She doesn't know how to use silverware at all.
Get out of here!
Well, also, like, she's this fierce warrior, right? Like, she's been stabbed multiple times. She has scars all over her body. So, you would think...
She does not. She does not. Like, if I could break kayfabe for a minute, she absolutely does not.
No, but come on. It is... There's a whole, like, dialogue exchange where people talk about the scars on her body. Surely, she could endure having her hair combed without, like, screaming in pain, right?
Matt, no, she can't, because that's not the kind of thing they do in the warrior village.
Goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious.
So, through all of this... Like, Hundra and Drachma, they kind of build a little friendship. Like, they develop a friendship because there's a scene where Hundra is standing in front of the high priest, and they're kind of, like, asking her questions, and they're like, hey, maybe you could provide us with some information. We found out that a woman in this village has a child that she hasn't told anybody about. She has a son. Who is she? And Hundra knows that it's Drachma, but she's like, I haven't heard anything. And so there's a whole thing where she and Drachma are like, Drachma's like, hey, thanks so much for helping me out. And they come to this little agreement where Drachma's going to, like, help her get dolled up so she can go have sex with Padre. And Hundra is going to teach Drachma how to fight. So we get another montage where Hundra's kind of figuring out how to dress, figuring out how to put on makeup. And Drachma, like, she's, like, sparring with Drachma, teaching her how to fight.
Yeah.
Finally, after some time, Hundra's like, okay, time to go have sex.
Yeah, she's hot now. So, like, very clearly, so different from how she looked before.
She looks, yeah, pretty much the same, just in slightly different clothes with cleaner hair and some makeup. And so she goes to Padre's room. He lives in, like, a room. It's like his doctor's office / apartment.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's his fantasy house. It's his sword and sorcery house. You know how this works.
Yeah. So she goes in there. She's laying down. She's more than convinced that this is the only time she'll ever need to have sex because she's going to get pregnant right away.
Yeah. And boom. Right in there. So first time.
She lays down on the bed. She waits for Padre to get home. Padre walks in and he goes, hey, you look better now. And they have and sex.
Like, and she's like, yeah, put the seed in me.
And they do it.
And they do, and here's what I thought was maybe the wildest thing about this movie. She's completely right. The next day, she, like...
Well, no, there's another scene between this.
Oh, okay, is there?
Where she's kind of like, hey, you know, maybe I didn't get pregnant. She's talking to Drachma. She's like, maybe I didn't get pregnant. Maybe I should go see Padre again and again and again. Because yeah. She loves that D now.
She does love his good Dr. D. They call him Dr. Love.
Then there's a wild scene after that, which we don't know how much time has passed.
Well, she – no, because the scene where she goes, hey, I might have to go back there again is definitely the scene where she goes – like she's talking to Drachma and she goes, well, I'm pregnant now.
There's a scene transition because the one where she says I need to go back and see Padre again is in like a bedroom. Then the one where she says I know I'm pregnant, she's like outside watching a bunch of other women bathe.
Okay.
Which is also buck wild. But, like, we don't know how much time has passed, but she's like, hey, I know I'm pregnant.
Yeah, she goes, yep, I'm pregnant. And we have no indication of how much time has passed. We have no indication of how she knows this.
No, none at all.
Because she does, like, because she is not, like, showing or anything. Which is fine, because the next scene she's having a baby.
Yeah, which means to me that, like, they ran out of budget and could not buy a pregnancy suit for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they couldn't buy costumes to put over a pregnancy suit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she has a baby the very next scene. And as soon as she has the baby, well, first of all, she's like, I know that's a girl. Give me that baby girl. And Potteray, who is not there at first because he's got to go deliver other babies.
Yeah. His child is being born, and he comes in, and somebody's like, hey, you're late. And he goes, yeah, she ain't the only one giving birth today.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
So he finally, like, gets her through the pregnancy with some very weird obstetrician moves.
He just kind of like putting his hands on her tummy and, like, just, like, you know, like, you would let air out of, like, a, like, you were putting, like, vegetables in a plastic bag and you wanted to get some of the air out of there.
He's, like, squeezing the baby out, like, the little bit of toothpaste that's left in a tube.
Yeah. That's how it works, right? I'm pretty sure. I've been watching a lot of ER lately.
I think that is how that works.
Absolutely how it works.
So finally she gives birth. She's like, give me that baby girl. It is a baby girl, even though there's some question about it at first. And Potteray's like, hey, we know the next one's going to be a boy, right? And Hundra's like, no, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Time to go.
Yeah. The next one will be a boy. All right, well, peace out. Time to go back to the woods.
But, sorry, twist, the high priest and his lackey guy, who I kept comparing to Jimmy Hart, show up, kidnap Hundra's daughter, and Dracula's son. And they're like, you got to come bow to the bull. You didn't ever bow to the bull. You got to come bow to the bull, or we're going to feed your baby to the vultures.
Yeah, because they've realized that she has a baby, because I guess they saw her between scenes when she was pregnant, and then they got Dracula to help them kidnap her baby by threatening her baby. So many babies.
But her kid's not a baby. Her kid's like 4 years old. Her kid can talk.
Okay, fair.
But both kids got kidnapped. And so, like, Hundra gets taken to the sex cave. And they're telling her, like, bow to the bull, bow to the chieftains. Or we're going to kill your kid. Meanwhile, Dracula knows what's going on. So she goes to the place where the kids are being held. She uses some of these fighting skills that she learned to kill a guard. Then she ends up killing Jimmy Hart, too, by stabbing him after a prolonged fight and exchange of dialogue.
I gotta say, I was a little disappointed that she did, like, she was just like, yep, all right, I'll bow to the bull, I'll bow to the chieftains. But then she does, like, this is where the first bit of the movie comes back, because this fight is also wild as hell.
Well,
and
okay,
mad violent.
So she continues to think that her kid is in danger until Dracula shows back up with the kids. And she's like, hey, the kids are fine. And that is when Hundra launches into fuck these dudes up mode.
Yeah. Buck wild. It's kind of great. Like, what does she do when there's that splutch sound effect?
There's a lot of stabbing. There's a lot of, okay, so there's a part where Potteray shows up with her sword that she's had through the whole movie.
He's like keeping, he's wearing like a bathrobe.
Yeah.
Is his costume.
Yeah.
And he is keeping it down the front of his robe, which I thought was very funny.
He is indeed doing that. Yes.
He's like, here you go. And then she just starts sorting dudes to death.
Yeah. Just beating the ever-loving fuck out of these guys. And, like, they're trying to protect themselves with, like, clay pots. She's smashing the fucking clay pots. She's just wrecking everybody.
it's pretty, like, if the movie was the first scene and this scene, it'd be pretty good.
The only thing that it's missing, and the thing we kept asking the movie to do for us, was give us her fighting the bull.
Yeah.
She never fights the bull.
Honestly, could not believe that, like, because they bring a bull out at one point, and then that's kind of the last we see of it. Really?
The only thing I can figure is that there was no budget to have her fight a bull. Because that would be some, like, tough stunt stuff, even with the reckless stunts that are in this movie.
You gotta at least get a trained animal.
Yeah. So she eventually ends up killing the high priest too. And at this point she's like, okay, that's all done. I am definitely leaving town. So she rides off out of town, returns to her homelands with her child, ostensibly to repopulate the village or be the start of a new society for her people. And then as she's riding away, the voiceover narration says, Hundra inspired all other women after that. All right, Chris, what are the high points of Hundra?
The opening scene, I cannot stress this enough, genuinely feels like something you would see in a, like, kind of grim and gritty, low magic fantasy today.
Yeah.
There is a part where, and it's portrayed as a back and forth fight. Like, the warrior women really do go with these dudes.
Yeah.
Which you don't often see in movies where, like, you know, the village gets destroyed. There's a part where, like,
in every other village getting destroyed scene we've watched in other movies, the villagers are very passive.
Uh-huh.
In this one, they are anything but.
Yeah. There's a part where one of the warrior women, like, tackles a guy into a stream, and so they're wrestling in the stream trying to drown each other, and then she grabs a rock and smashes his head in.
Yep.
That shit is, like, that is raw. Like, you do not see that kind of violence in, like, shitty sword and sorcery movies, usually.
Not usually.
It does give the whole thing, like, a, like, oh, okay, these women are actually badass, and, like, these dudes, like, this is a real fight sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
That was great. I want to say that's it. Okay, the high point, the music is by Ennio Morricone.
Yep.
And it is kind of as good as you would expect.
Yeah.
There will be a low point associated with that.
I will also say Lorraine Landon is pretty good as Hundra.
Not bad. Like, certainly not bad.
She's not wooden. I love the little taunts she does when she kills guys sometimes. Like, she's got personality to her. She can go from, like, very convincingly angry and tough to, you know, scenes where she's trying to seduce Padre, so either very clumsily or effectively. She, like, the scenes where she's, like, becoming friends with Dracoma are pretty good. Like, she might be the best lead actor of any of these movies we've watched.
I'm not going to say she has more personality than Mark Singer, because I think Mark Singer is actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
But she's on his level. And it's also great that, like, until she gets to the town, most of the dialogue in this movie is screaming.
Oh, yeah.
So there will be where she is just cold screaming at dudes while she is getting ready to murder them. That shit rules.
All right, Chris, what are our low points of Hundra?
The music is by Ennio Morricone, but I feel like they only paid for three songs, and then they just play those three songs.
The music is very repetitive. Much like the movie as a whole is rather repetitive.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say that the number one issue with this movie, and we talked about the runtime before we started, like, stuff takes too long. Every scene could be 30 seconds to a minute shorter.
Every scene, like, most scenes could be about half as long as they are. Like, this movie should not, in under any circumstances, be over 90 minutes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So, I was looking this up. The original theatrical release of this movie is 90 minutes. The DVD restoration is the one we watched. It's the one that's 109.
I wonder if there's... if like they just made scenes longer, or if there are scenes that we got that were not in the theatrical release.
I don't know. I would be interested to watch the 90-minute version to see if it goes at a better clip or if it's missing important plot stuff.
I will say, building the plot, right, around Hundra is liberating women from sexual servitude.
Yeah.
Is in itself not bad. Nor is the idea of the plot being like, Hundra's a badass, but she needs to learn to fuck. And get like can get really into that. That's also not bad. None of it is quite good put together.
Well, and none of it is as good as a straightforward Hundra, everybody in Hundra's village died. She's gonna get revenge.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's absolutely a way to play this same story with her, like, starting off and being like, yeah, I'm not going to fuck some dude. I like hunting and swords. And then, you know, like, meeting someone who changes that, where she realizes, like, hey, maybe everybody's not all bad. Whether that's a padre, like it is in this movie, or the absolute lesbian subtext that is within this movie.
Yes, for sure.
I think you could do it and have it be better than it is.
Yeah, along those lines, like, you know, it's just like all the weird sex stuff in the movie doesn't really add to it. It just makes it weirder.
Yeah.
Like, it detracts from Hundra being a cool action hero.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's so much of this movie, like, again, 20 minutes into this, we were like, oh, this rules. This is great. And then it just meandered and wandered and lost itself.
Yeah, I mean, even it might be better if it weren't for the how slow it gets at certain points. All right, Chris, what are our final thoughts about Hundra?
I feel like we know more about Matt Simber than I wanted to know about Matt Simber. I mean, like, in a very William Moulton Marston sort of way.
In some ways, Glow told us all that about Matt Simber.
Yeah. Did we talk about how the bad guy is face-sitted to death?
We did not.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. That's a little treat for everybody who listens to the end of the show. The evil warlord.
Yeah, I said that Hundra killed him. He actually is killed by other concubines who were inspired by Hundra.
Yeah, there's a concubine revolt, and then literally one of them sits on his face until he is dead.
Yeah. That's what happens.
That's the big, like, I feel like that's going to be the big takeaway from this movie for me. It's like, I know too much about Matt Simber.
Okay. We have now watched 3 Fonans. Do we want to rank them from best to worst?
Are we done? Are we done with Fonans for now?
I think we're done with Fonans for now. We didn't get any good Fonan recommendations on Amazon Prime when this was over.
I mean, we certainly got some recommendations.
We got some recommendations. They were not phone-in recommendations.
Yeah, sadly. Ator's dead fucking last.
Ator is definitely number 3.
Yeah.
Or Ator.
I feel like this is probably number 2. Beastmaster isn't great, but it's fun. Beastmaster's fun.
I go back and forth. I'm actually going back and forth on whether this is number 1 or Beastmaster is number 1. I almost want to put them as a tie. I feel like they're pretty equally good. Like, I was surprised by how much of Hundra I did enjoy, even with the slow parts, you know? Because Beastmaster had its slow parts, too.
Beastmaster does have its slow parts. Beastmaster 2, Through the Portal of Time, however.
Well, we'll get there one day. We will get there one day.
One day.
That is it for Nonans or Phonans or whatever we want to call them. We will be back in the month of May with another movie. Since, Chris, you and I will be on a road trip together, possibly with some downtime, it is entirely possible that we could go see a movie in a theater and talk about it.
Hey, Matt, can I just tell you something real quick?
You may.
Just went to look. Beastmaster 2 full movie is on YouTube.
I'm sure the quality is so bad.
It's actually not bad. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, that's something to consider. Maybe we will continue Fonans for one more. in the month of May. But we do have the opportunity to go see a movie in a theater.
We should do that.
In Ohio.
We'll have some time when we're up at PodFest.
Yeah, I'm assuming we're going to have some downtime. So yeah. We could do that, depending on what is playing and what we can find.
Sherlock Gnomes?
Hey, Sherlock Gnomes is a strong contender for something we could go see.
No, thank you.
Whatever the case, come back and join us next month for another episode of Movie Fighters. Chris, before we get out of here, where can people find you online?
People can find me online by going to the-isb.com. That's Chris's Invincible Superblog. That's my old homepage. Nope. That's my old blog. Now it's my homepage. It has links to all the stuff that I do here, there, and around the web. In the time since our last episode, I've started a new podcast called Apocrypals. It's me and Benito Serino reading the Bible and the Apocrypha that goes along with the Bible. So listen to it. It's very fun. It's Movie Fighters, but for the Bible, but we couldn't call it Bible Fighters for obvious reasons.
You can find all my stuff at mattdwilson.net. That is the place where you can find links to my other podcasts, my books, my comics, and all my social media. Our music is by Michael Kill, except for the Snack Situation theme song, which is by Matt Fisher. Our web design, our site design, is by Sean Bogus. See you next time, everybody.
Bye, everybody. We love you.
This has been a Clytus Media production.